This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, here comes trouble. Put your helmet on. And you do it to Liz and Red.
Welcome to the Blacklist AfterBuzz After Show. We are here discussing episode number 4, The Djinn.
The Djinn.
Or The Djinn.
Okay.
The Djinn. I'm Joe Braswell, joined as always by the lovely Julia Carely.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be back.
And we're listening to TV on the Radio, which is a song called Trouble, which is the last song they played before the last montage. Which, you know, I don't have a lot to say about. But before we get into the episode, I want to take care of a couple of things of business. Number one, you can notice that Joe Sanfilippo is not here. It's just the two of us for the fourth episode in a row. My yellow blouse wearing is seeming very safe. However, I will say this. I've had a long talk with Mr. Sanfilippo, as has Julia. We've talked this over. And two things are happening, as I mentioned on the YouTube thread. First thing is, Joe Filippo will be back for next week's episode.
He's coming.
100% he will be back. He claims he will be back for the run of the show, but we will see about that. Second thing is, we are going to do our recaps on Friday morning. So as opposed to having to wait until Monday to get these recaps and to get our AfterBuzz episodes, we are going to now move to Friday. So, you know, we can't quite do them on Pacific time after the Blacklist airs, so the best we can do is Friday morning, but at least they'll be up straight away, right away, and we are listening to what you guys say and how the shows we want to do, so that's what we're going to do, and that's going to happen starting next week, so thank you for all your feedback there.
Starting this Friday. Yes.
So we're doing two shows in 1 week.
Yes, we are.
That's right.
You're going to be sick of us.
Yeah, so we will be recapping episode 5 on Friday morning. So we will be caught up as I believe I promised at the top of this.
We kind of dove in,
had some house cleaning to do. We got to get it all
house
together.
Cleaning, some scheduling. We're getting it all worked out.
And we'll also have the three of us, and we're actually working on a third. It probably won't be the lovely Nando, although I'm trying to get him to call in. It probably will be another person who we love very much. If you're familiar with us, you'll know who this person is. We're just working on her schedule.
Yes.
But I won't say who she is.
No.
Do
I'm excited.
No, I'm kidding.
Because I love her.
But let's get into the episode of Blacklist, episode 4, The Djinn. The Djinn.
You just enjoy saying Djinn.
I like The Djinn. Well, one thing I noticed is that, like, I feel like, I like saying it, but they love saying it more than me. I feel like there's a drinking game about how many times the Blacklist says the Blacklister's name. Like, we'd be wasted in this one. Because I heard The Djinn, like, probably 80 times.
Well, if there was a real person in your life who was called The Djinn,
right,
wouldn't you just be saying it all the frickin' time?
The Djinn. Who's The Djinn?
Ooh,
I don't know.
You don't know The Djinn. Well, let me tell you about The Djinn.
I am The Djinn. Like, I'm the real... Who's The Djinn now? The Djinn.
I am The Djinn now.
I'm, like, wasted. That would be... I mean, I think that'd be a really good drinking game, actually.
Right.
Next week, whatever the Blacklister's name, whoever it is, let's see how many times they say the name.
Oh, yeah. Let's all do this, guys.
Yeah. Let's all get wasted, everybody.
Safely.
But this one, yeah, safely. But this one would have been bad.
But,
okay, so The Djinn. I got to say also, when I saw the preview of The Djinn in the last
it should
week.
Be a tricky game here right
I
now.
No, The Djinn. I like saying The Djinn.
I'm already drunk.
And you can't just say Djinn. It's like The Djinn.
The Djinn.
Anyway, when I saw the preview, I was like, oh no, I just saw, who we know is Alice now, but
yes,
we thought was a djinn in the white flowing thing and the, you know, like, what are your desires?
And that was, and like, Lizzie's just being drawn into her.
And that was like, I was like, oh no.
Oh dear.
It's like, this blacklister, you know, whatever, answers your very desire. I'm like, oh boy. the shark has been jumped and then jumped again. But I'm delighted to say that I was wrong. And this was, I thought this was a really well written and great episode, right?
I loved this episode. Episode one, I loved. Two, I loved. Three, I was like, oh. And then, like you, I saw that preview. I was like, oh no.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Oh, right. Really? Come on, guys. But fully, totally all in now. I like the pace of the storytelling that they're doing. I like the way they're writing these episodes. I love the relationships. And I'm digging these blacklisters that they're introducing.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the twist. We talked about this off air. I want to bring this up. I feel like that there's... We've spoken a little bit last week. There's definitely a tone shift in sort of the writing. I think they're really focusing in on kind of the espionage sort of mystery of the procedural. I think the procedurals in the past have been more action oriented. Like, it's the blacklist. We got to go get him. And he's doing something bad. This one is kind of like they're all about sort of uncovering a mystery. They feel more like a detective story or a spy story and uncovering these things. And they're awful twisty and turny. Like, last week was super twisty and turny. Like, it wasn't the farmer. He's not just this. He has a virus. Oh, he doesn't have a virus. You know, it's all that. It's really the CTO who's behind this. You know, so there was a lot of that. This was no different. There was a lot of, like, here's the djinn. Wait, she's not the djinn. Someone else is the djinn. Oh, she's the djinn, but she's not the real djinn. She's actually a dude. No, but wait, she's not, you know, thinking that. And she's actually, she's the owner of the company, and her dad's in the car. So there's a lot of that. But I like it because I like the effort. I like the effort to be able to sort of wind us down and not see things coming. Because one of my complaints with the blacklist is I feel like I've always been sort of two steps ahead of the blacklist.
Sure.
So it's fun to not feel that way.
I'm enjoying it. Yes, I absolutely agree with what you're saying because, you know, when we do this, when we sit and watch multiple times, we feel like we can start predicting things before it happens. And so this, I have no idea what's going to happen next.
Right.
Sometimes it does feel a little bit convoluted, but not so much that I can't follow it.
Right.
And they're fun twists and turns.
Yeah, they are. They're fun.
They're enjoyable twists and turns. I never saw it coming that she was a dude.
Nope.
Didn't.
Who did?
What? Yes. I was totally in on the story that she was just sort of looked over because she was a woman because of the culture.
Yeah.
Nope.
I'm looked past. And it's really my company.
Nope.
And I'm
gender
taking those over for you. And I'm really the djinn. And I'm a dude. Wait, what?
Dude.
What happened?
But I'm also, you know, we talked a little bit about the writing. And I like the long game this season because I feel like it's a story that we're all in on.
Right.
You know, there's mysteries to be solved.
That's a great point.
But we're all in it together.
Yeah,
and there's not just some like big bad waiting out there and we don't know what we're all working towards. So I feel like this is a definite team effort now.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a fantastic point, Julia. And I totally agree because I think that it helps with the audience, with the viewer, if you're in on the game. You feel a lot less manipulated if it's like you hate that MacGuffin that you don't see. It's like, well, how did that happen? Oh, well, I forgot. I have my friend Jim over here who did that thing. Like, Jim, where did he come from? Ah, the blacklist. But in this instance, like, everything seems to be in front of us and we're kind of along for the ride. We know what's happening, so we get to all experience it together. There's no weird, like, you know, sort of red rabbits out of the hat or secret, like, you know, secrets to be uncovered and revealed that now sort of tie everything together, which is kind of like...
I'm sure there are still a lot of secrets to be revealed, but I maybe it just had to take this long to get to know these characters.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is, and for their relationship to become what it is now.
Right.
But because, you know, before the push and pull, I like you, I don't like you, I trust you, I don't trust you. Like, I'm over it.
Yeah.
So now we're all on the same team.
We are. We do have another push and pull, which is just Lizzie. I'll get to that in a second. I'm sorry. I cannot. Lizzie, like, you're not going to call Tom, are you?
She makes poor choices.
No, I'm not going to call Tom. Why would I do that? Hello, Tom.
Tom?
I love you. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. So let's crack into this. So it opens with us seeing this. That's our introduction to who we think and is the djinn, mm-hmm. and this guy who's clearly a doctor, whose son has been ravished or eaten from the inside out by drugs, and the djinn sort of says, "It's your opportunity to return the favor mm-hmm. in kind." So we are to assume that this doctor not only mutilates this guy as he's marking up his organs and mm-hmm. heart and everything, but there's a table set.
Yes.
Another twist. Like another, like Hannibal. That's very Hannibal.
It's first thing about
like
too.
A throw to Hannibal. I mean, I was okay with that, but it was an interesting twist that he was going to eat him as well.
Yeah. that's a weird way to exact your revenge.
It's a bit excessive. You know, even if what if he's not a cannibal and he's just like, you ate my son, I'm going to eat you. I don't know. Like, this sucks. I hate the way it tastes, but I'm getting revenge.
I wonder what his clandestine meeting with the djinn was.
Right.
You know, over a nice cup of tea like Lizzie had. Tell me your desires. I want to eat him.
Yeah. Well, he ate my son from the inside out. I want to eat him from the inside out.
Okay. Anyways, to each their own.
To each their own. So that happens. So we get the idea there. And I think that helps in setting the usually when we see the blacklister, there's a bit of a sinister nature to what this blacklister is doing or is capable of. So that's what we usually get in these opening scenes. So mm-hmm. it's kind of hard. I think that we had to have something where we see the djinn, you know, as we think she is, in some sort of like very sinister situation. Like, well, there he is, eat him, you know, as opposed to just, you know, I don't know, floating around. Like, I think we had to see something. So I guess eating someone was the best way to go.
I do like the juxtaposition of her etherealness versus the atrocities that she is allowing to happen. I like that.
I do. And
it painted a picture.
Well, let's talk about the djinn. Well, Alice.
Yeah.
I liked the idea of her. I was a little concerned, but when I bought into it slightly, and I was really glad that and then when I'm skipping ahead, of course, I'm just following this djinn thought. When Lizzie went to go see her and meet her, and we jumped through all the hoops to get to her in the video game, and the whole thing. That like 1992 video game, by the way.
Yes.
Like, those great. The djinn can't afford any better code writers.
If it ain't broke.
Jeez.
It's working.
Like, come on, djinn. But anyway, so the 1992 video game, she met the djinn, she got in there, and the crib, it was like decked out. It was like I Dream a Genie meets like, I don't know what. She's like Hostel too. It's also the movie Hostel, the Eli Roth movie.
Yeah.
Very similar premise in that these rich people pay to be able to, not necessarily exact revenge, but they pay a lot of money to be able to do horrible things to people.
Yes.
This sort of feels like the playground of the elite. If you have enough money, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, but she doesn't grant the wishes just to anyone, as we saw. It has to be a real deep desire.
Yeah, it's not the highest bidder sort of thing, right?
No.
It's like, I have all this money, but what is your thing?
They have to really want it. So there's some morality involved.
There's some morality, but what I'm getting at is like, when we got to her crib and it's got the pillows and she's at the tent.
Oh,
it's
yes.
all decked
very
out.
Like Sahara Desert.
Very like, and she's got the tea.
Well, yes.
And she's like,
she is British.
What are your desires? So, and then I was like, oh no. And then, once Lizzie said, I want to exact revenge.
I totally liked it.
I was okay with the whole thing, but I was like, I want to exact revenge. She's like, I sense that that's not what you want to do. I'm like, does she have real powers? What is she sensing?
She could read people. That's why she was so good at what she did. That's why she became the face of the operation.
I sense.
That's why she's moving on.
I sense that you don't. Okay. That part, I was like, okay.
I liked it. I liked it because I feel like it would... It definitely sets the scene and sets people at ease.
Okay.
So they will really, truly reveal what their desires are.
Do you think she tells people, I'm sensing something else every time to sort of get... Is that one of her parlor tricks? Or do you think she's really sensing something in Lizzie?
I think she was really sensing something in Lizzie.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But why this is important to me, because just when I was like, this is kind of, you know, I don't know, this is kind of dinner theater-ish, it turns out that she's an actress, very reminiscent of, spoiler alert, Iron Man 3, you know, the Mandarin. Very, very reminiscent of the Mandarin, which I love the idea of someone hiring someone to be the front of something. I like the idea.
Sure.
Because in my mind, these blacklisters that are coming up, including this one, they have this, I mentioned this last week, they have this sort of Bond villain quality that is sometimes over the top and cool, but also a little like, kind of like not believable.
Mm-hmm.
So when the djinn comes up, all ethereal and whatever, I'm like, this is too on the nose Bond villain. So it's nice to know that like she was a creation.
Yeah.
And Alice
herself.
Playing
the part.
exactly was a model in short shorts at car shows.
Car shows.
You know, and at conventions. So that was cool. Just like the Mandarin. Mm-hmm. You know. So anyway, so that's why I digress greatly to the gin. So way back to the beginning, after we see the opening scene of the gin, we see that Red is talking to our old friend.
Was that Leonard Call?
That was Leonard Call. Okay. Our friend Leonard Call, which is kind of a cool callback, if you will.
Oh, no, it's bad.
Because he's the information expert. He's the guy who helped crack the fulcrum, you know. So if anyone can find Dembe, it's Leonard Call. And I like this is what I love about the world of the Blacklist, that they sort of bring these people back that populate the world. I populate Red's world, how we get to know them, you know, more and more, and Leonard's one of these people. I thought that was sort of a lovely scene in like Red sort of like wanting to find him. He's more, what do you say?
He's more than an associate.
More than an associate. But then we get the,
that's what it was.
And then we
or
get
an acquaintance, one of those.
Then we get the lovely reveal that they're not anywhere. They're at Aram's crib. I thought that was so cool.
Oh, did you see the little selfie?
Oh, yeah.
Of Samar and Aram on his, like, tacked right front and center on his refrigerator.
In the EW recap, they talk about how they would love to just spend like a whole episode in Aram's apartment, or just a mini episode to see,
it's a
like
cool apartment,
just to check out the fridge, all the selfies. I agree. Yeah. And plus, we learned so much about Aram. First of all, my man, he rides a bike to work.
Of course he does. I am not at all surprised.
He's got a little helmet.
Well, he is very.
He left the helmets on. Like, whoa.
He's cautious. And law-abiding.
And I like that, you know, it's interesting that he opens the door and, you know, a guy comes out like, hey, what are you doing in my house, strange man? Like, he's FBI, there's no sidearm drawn.
No. Nope.
There's no nothing. I would assume Aram has a sidearm or no? Good question. Anyway.
That is a good question.
So, like, he comes out and he's like, come on in, Aram. It's international super criminal Red Reddington. He's like, Red, is that you? Like, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, bud. He's so happy to see him.
Like, if that's wrestler, there's guns drawn immediately,
oh, God,
right?
Yes.
You know, wrestler in the Bob, you're like drawing guns and kicking down doors. Aram's like, yeah. So, I thought that was cool, and it kind of spoke to what I think we talked about earlier about the fact that we knew Aram would be like Benji
in Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible series, like sort of helping either unwittingly or willingly.
Mm-hmm.
So he came in there. Lizzie comes out of the shower. He sort of pleads his case, and then I love the way Aram sort of said that I would be willing to do this, but I have to share it with Wrestler.
Yes.
Like, what did you make of that whole sort of sequence?
Well, first of all, the exchange between Aram and Lizzie was so genuine. Mm-hmm. He was so happy to see her, and I feel like that moment was a moment we don't get very often from her.
Yes.
And we get them from him, but nice to see them together.
Sure.
And just that relief, because he's really been standing up for her this whole time. So I feel like also he must have felt some pride that they came to him, that they trusted him, that everything he's been thinking all along was right. And, you know, him saying that, you know, whatever, if I do this for you, I will have to tell Wrestler. That just shows the sort of character that he is. Mm-hmm. He's true blue. He's willing to sort of skirt the lines, though, which I like about Aram as well.
I do, too.
I don't know. I liked it.
I liked it, too.
I liked every second of it.
And it
didn't put him in a bad position in the end, either, because I don't want to see Aram in a bad position. And I don't think Red wants to put him in a bad position, either, because they respect his work.
I think that Red sort of obviously knew that he can go back and he will, you know, talk to the FBI and no one will be in trouble.
Yeah.
But to your point, I do like that he's like, this may be inappropriate, but you look amazing. You know, it's like, Aram. You know, just, you know, that guy,
he adds humanity to the show.
He does add humanity to the show. I think he's a really lovable character. And the show's populated now. I think we really, I mentioned this before, really got down to, a set of characters that, we really, really all like, except for maybe one, which will remain nameless, but like, I think everyone on the show, we like everyone. I think it's good.
I don't know if it's the writing or Amir Arison as the actor who we had on last season that we had him on.
Yep.
You can just tell that he really has developed this character, even though we don't often see him. He doesn't often get too much more to do, than, you know, list off the research that he's done. He's done something so great with his character.
Yeah.
And there's a definite history behind it. And I appreciate when an actor puts in that work.
Well, as we head to the break, the hiatus here, we're going to try to get some more folks in. Maybe we can get Amir back and maybe some more folks in before the Super Bowl sort of relaunch thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We love him. I'm gonna table the whole Tom and Cooper thing, because I want to just treat that as a separate entity. We're gonna stay along this line. So Rom goes back. He goes back. He shares his findings with Wrestler and Navabi. And are like, how are you feeling about? We're giving sort of Navabi more to do as well. And how are you feeling about? Wrestlers and Navabi sort of back and forth and take on what the motives of Red are and what's happening. Well, how are you reading this whole thing?
Wrestler, I think, is pretty straightforward to me at this point in what his objective is. Navabi, I've always sort of been wary of her. I mean, wasn't she brought into the task force in the first place by Red to be something of a mole?
Yes. This is something that, again, the EW recap brought up, or the Wall Street Journal recap. I think it was the EW recap brought it up. And I wrote it down as well. It was like she has really brought the task force as a mole for Reddington. Now she's tracking him down as a part of the FBI. Or is she still on his team?
I have no idea. Like, I'm so confused by it.
Well, I'm going to assume that the writers that John, Blomkamp and the gang have not forgotten that, obviously, and that they sort of lulled us to sleep with the fact that she's there. But that's still got to be in play, right?
It has to be.
At some point, Navabi's got to, like, you know, get undormant.
But what is she doing? Is she working really to find Red and Lizzie right now?
Right.
Because she seems pretty adamant to take Lizzie down, and she seems definitely against her in saying, and you know, in one of those last scenes she has with Wrestler, I think it was, when she goes, you know, she made the decision to pull that trigger.
Great scene, too.
And I've done that, too. I've taken out men the same way, and I'm willing to pay for it.
Right.
But is she paying for it?
I thought you were talking about you. I'm like, have you, Julia? I'm like, you're so convincing. I'm like, whoa.
I've taken out men the same exact way, Jeff.
Nice to live. We're live. Edit that out, Lemieux. No, don't let Julia go to jail.
Thanks. Can we edit that out, guys?
No. Go ahead.
Anyways, nope. Nope. It's out there. I'm on the run.
Right.
Anyway, I'm just a little bit confused, and I look forward to seeing what they do with it, because that is a big sort of secret that needs to come out in one way or another. Is she really working to find Red?
I agree.
And bring Lizzie to justice?
I agree.
Or not?
I do like that they're continuing with this thread of it's not really believable to me to a certain degree that Wrestler is like, Lizzie's a bad guy, I don't know what to think about this. It's kind of like, I like the idea that, you know, Wrestler's cracking. She may or may not be innocent, but I've still got to do my job and bring her in, like the Tommy Lee Jones and the fugitive tack we talked about. Mm-hmm. And I also like the fact that Navabi is sort of, you know, siding with him, sort of saying, look, whatever the thing is, she actually did pull the trigger and kill somebody. She's actually shooting cops and doing stuff. So she's willing to, you know, kill people. So whether she's innocent or not, it's our job to sort of bring her in by getting to the bottom of this.
Yeah, she's running around free as a little bluebird.
Who?
That's not the word. That's
Navabi?
Not the phrase.
Free as a bluebird.
Free as a bird. Let's just
the
go
internet
with free
says.
As a bird.
Free as a bluebird.
You know, she's saying she's taking out men the same exact way, and she's just floating around with you know, working for the FBI.
Hey man. Yeah, it's just straight from the...
How is she paying?
Yeah, I don't know. From the Mossad, I think. I don't know. I have no idea how this all works, but in terms of Navabi and like her being a ex sort of, you know, is she's a Middle Eastern but Israeli spy. Right?
Yeah.
A Middle Eastern woman turned Israeli spy turned FBI agent.
Yeah.
That's three separate countries of loyalty, and she's just got all...
And loyalty to Red on top of it as well.
And loyalty to Red. So, I don't know. She's an interesting one.
But I still love her.
Yeah. I love her.
And I
stare
at
more
her all day. Yeah.
Yeah. I want more of her. I want a bottle episode with just Navabi, like, tracking down Red or doing something. So we have that. So we find out that, and we see this other scene where the djinn, this is the scene where we have the big sort of misdirect, mm-hmm. where the djinn is talking to Nassim, who, and sort of granting her wish, we think.
Or well, maybe, she was.
She was, but she was sort of saying that, like, the preparations have been made. Now we are misdirected into thinking it's the djinn granting a wish, but it's really just her employer, or talking to an employee talking to an employer, saying, like, he's in there, we did it, you know. So, and we see that, you know, she has what's revealed to be her father.
Yes.
Like, and then we also see that it's revealed to her method was to, like, really nail him to a cross, literally.
Literally. With nails.
And not a cross meaning an X, not a cross meaning a cross, but a cross meaning a cross. a la Reek in Game of Thrones.
Oh, God.
Spoiler alert again. Sorry. poor Reek. He didn't exactly get Reek's fate, but, you know, getting nailed to a cross.
Well, she got Reek's fate.
Oh. Zing. Oh, that's right.
That's right.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
For both her and Reek. As far as I'm concerned. So what did you, like, I thought it was a bit, I love the comedy, sort of the unintentional comedy of when, it's just a great move, when after being questioned by the FBI, she's talking to her brother, and her brother calls, and his brother's like, hey, man, we're, you know, what are you doing? Like, this has happened. The FBI came, we're going to solve this out. And she's like, yeah, when I finish up here, kind of looks back.
Yeah.
And when I finish up
help
here, I'll get back
help
to you.
Help me, son. Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. They did it twice with the old, like, oh, don't go in there.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, roar, I'm in the cross. So
the ball gag.
The ball gag. Maybe that wasn't unintentional comedy, but I like those scenes of, like, you know, I'll be right with you. Anyway, so did you, when that was developing, what were you thinking? Were you thinking like, oh, she, I mean, were you ahead of this ever at all? Were you like, were your wheels turning?
My wheels were turning, but I had no idea who
I thought
this
brother was in. I mean, I don't know what to think.
Oh, I never thought the brother was in on it. He seemed a pretty sad sack.
All right.
He was a little wah wah.
And what did you think the dad did to her at that point?
At that point, I felt that she was being looked over because she was a woman, like it was a cultural thing, and that she had these great ideas, and he shut her out completely and just treated her like a little lady.
Right.
That's where my head was at.
Okay. So,
what did you think?
I didn't know what to think. I knew that there was another shoe was going to drop. I thought she was probably directly involved with the cabal somehow. It didn't even occur to me that she was the djinn or the you know, until.
Never occurred to me that she was the djinn.
Until Alice, poor Alice, was just kicking it in their kitchen, you
in
know,
Yonkers.
In Yonkers. I thought, like, oh, she's not. That's not very djinnish.
No.
That's not very the djinnish.
No.
You know, the djinn is not in a Yonkers crib, like with a baby in the front yard. But anyway, and then I thought, oh, the djinn is clearly. Navabi. Nasir. Yes. So, wait, but formerly Nasir, right? Nasir,
what?
Was it Nasir and term Nasim?
I don't remember.
I think her name's Nas.
They were both
Nasim, and then her real name was
her given name when she was a boy.
Was, I think, Nasir. Am I making that up?
Something like that.
All right.
I don't know.
Anywho, so I had no idea what to think, but I did. I like the scene where they're trying to figure out as well, where, like, you know, Wrestler and Aram and Navabi are like, what are these connections? Why they're doing all of this, but they're not running. Like, what's happening? Like, you know, why they must be trying to do something. What, like, the Wrestler's like, what's Red doing here? And Navabi's like, they're fugitives, but they're not running. Well, so they must be trying, if not trying to clear Lizzie's name, then what are they trying to do, Wrestler?
Well, first of all, I liked how this whole setup of getting the FBI to help them was a throwback to original Blacklist season one of using the FBI to sort of do his bidding.
Right.
So I'm glad to see that we're still doing that, still taking full advantage of that.
Yes, ma'am.
But again, it's a symbiotic relationship, mm-hmm. and they'll do what he wants in order to get close to him to catch him.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So I enjoyed that. And yeah, what are they doing? I like their sort of homeland board of the troll farmer and the big corporation that was working for the cabal from last week. And now the djinn and the counterfeiter and the lawyer, you know, all those people, they're trying to piece it together.
Yep. I agree. So
it made me think. I thought this whole thing was to exonerate Lizzie, but maybe there's something else to it.
Well, I'm beginning to believe that as we fill it, because they're doing the big homeland board, and as we fill the board, I'm beginning to think that there's going to be a larger connection to all these folks that that help us out as well. So, so getting to all that, then we get to the moment where very cool moment where they. You know, Liz and Red are held up in an old theater.
Love it.
Theater, a friend of Red's. And we get that wink at the audience where Red is going into one of his super Red monologues that I'm like glued to. I'm like, here he goes again. Get it, Spader. And of course, he's like, oh.
Bertolt Brecht.
Yes. That was a great wink at the end because he's got a monologue in him every single goddamn show. And then.
I also love.
The supreme
irony. You're a terrible actor.
The supreme irony of that line, which I won't even.
I can't. I'm not.
You're a terrible actor, Red. All right.
Hmm.
We won't. We will just skip over that one.
All I wrote is, that's rich.
I wrote.
That's it. That's all
I wrote supreme irony. So we. We'll dash past that. So, but then they decide they're going to go in and infiltrate the gin and get Lizzie in there. And they have an elaborate plan. They got the tracking device. They got everything else going.
I just need to say, yes. I'm loving all their little hideouts.
Yeah, it's a great.
And this is like one of my favorites.
The theater.
Well, the shipping container, the theater that is an actual like old apartment.
Yep.
And he goes, I have to go rest. And he goes, let's get some rest. Goes through the door, which is just a set.
Yes.
And just lies on the bed there. I was like, this is fantastic.
It's fantastic. Again, it's what we want. It's sort of the peek on the other side, a peek into Red's world, right? So we get the whole time, it's like, how does Red move around? How does Red get from place to place? How does he survive?
Yes.
And now we're seeing
really
it.
Seeing it.
And it's kind of cool. And it's
awesome.
And it's really fun to see. So they do this thing. And I was wondering whatever happened to my man, Chris Christopherson, Red, sort of right-hand gunman.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows up again. I don't think he even has a name. I think I looked him up. Does he have a name? My man? I keep calling him Chris Christopherson because for lack of a better word, but I don't know his name. But anyway, so him and, you know, Red are shadowing Lizzie, and of course they lose her,
mm-hmm.
which was that. And she goes to the gym. We talked about that already. She goes to the gym. She does a move. She plants a tracking device, which ultimately leads them to her house in Yonkers, where we find out she's not the gin at all.
Yes.
But before that, Red does issue a staunch warning to Lizzie to not contact Tom Keene.
I know
what you're thinking. Like, the FBI is hot on our trail. This is serious business. We're fugitives. I'm Red Reddington. I've never been wrong ever. Please do not contact Tom.
She's please, like, please,
I promise.
Please.
So there's that.
And then, ring, ring, ring.
Okay, so we got through that, and then we realized that the gin is actually, as we already kind of spoiled and talked about, the gin is actually Nassim, who is orchestrating this hostile takeover of the company for all these reasons that we revealed that she was actually a gay man, who the father was ashamed by.
Yes, and he forced gender reassignment
upon
her.
How did you feel about that whole twistity twist?
I was literally taken aback by it.
Right.
Didn't see it coming, not in a million years. I thought it was pretty horrific. I did enjoy Red's soapbox when he revealed all of this to us.
A little soapbox. Little Aaron Sorkin-y.
He had some soapboxy moments about politics.
Felt a little newsroom, a little Aaron Sorkin-y.
All
politics aside, that was cool. That's cool.
But it was a great move on his point,
yeah.
on his part, because then he gained the trust of the djinn.
Right.
Of Nassim.
Right.
Because it very much so seemed like he was on her side, that he was so appalled by what this father would do to his own son, because he's so fearful of how he would be perceived, that I just thought it was a really genius move. So she just gave him the ledger. I'll escape with you. We're friends, right?
Right.
Whatever.
Whip. I also love the whole it's just funny because it's a sad story. So his soapbox was sort of like, you know, I sympathize with you. I think this is horrible. Your dad's a horrible person for doing this to you. I think this is all terrible, and this is a bummer. But you're still a bad guy. Get out of here. Beat it. So that was kind of not like that. I also love the fun that they're having. Again, I mentioned at the top with the djinn. I thought, when she gives the reveal, like, I am the djinn or whatever. I don't think she said that, but I felt like she said that to her dad. What did she say to her dad? What was the actual line? But it felt like when she was revealing herself to, like, as the djinn, I have the power. Whatever. It just felt like in my head, all I heard was, I am the djinn. She didn't say that, right?
I don't think she said that.
I wanted to say that.
I don't even think she even said the word djinn.
No, she did. She said it to her dad. She said it to her dad.
Well, she was just sort of unraveling her whole long game, her whole plot of this business. I was just so enraged and had all these ideas of revenge that I turned it into a business.
And then Red, at the end, of course, said, who's the djinn now? Which I thought was great. I think that was the last time we drank. by the time we were on the floor.
Well, I also like that his revenge fantasy that he sort of lays out in the very last scene there was to walk out with two women on his arm, and you think he's talking about Lizzie and the djinn, and it turns out it's Lizzie and Alice.
I didn't even know that. I got double crossed again. That's great. I didn't realize that's another.
Because he was her first client.
That was his
revenge fantasy. When he was convincing Alice to take over as the djinn herself, get rid of the old djinn, get rid of the middleman.
You're
the face of it. You do it. I even have a first client for you. And it's him. And she delivered.
John Bokenkamp and Daniel Cicerone, or Cerrone, who wrote this, are doing a great job on this one.
I loved it.
I loved it. That's good stuff. Again, a little bit of the Scooby-Doo. I would have got away with it if it wasn't for these dumb kids and that stupid dog, whatever. But I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it.
I like that. I like Red sort of saying, I like the villain sort of saying that, like having that, like, damn it, holding the mask, like, rah, the helicopter flies away. So,
women.
Women, what do you do? See a wrestler. I liked all of that.
Yeah, I did
so,
too.
So let's double back because we have two other great storylines to get to. Mm-hmm. So again, I liked all that stuff. That was all great.
I loved it.
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
None.
Except for, you know, the stuff we're gonna talk about right now, which is the Lizzie stuff. But so let's talk about Dembe first. So the Dembe Mr. Vargas situation. First of all, I thought it was cool to see Dembe, that scene with them, and he's sharpening the spoon, mm-hmm. and him saying, like, you know, if I'm willing to take my chances, because if they get me, then they're going after my daughter, so if I kill myself, they won't have any room. I did not see that move coming. And again, another, some more great writing. I didn't see the move coming where, you know, the guys come in, and they said, let me see your left
oh,
boot.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool. Another misdirection on misdirection.
That was a good one.
They're really doing a lot with the misdirections here, and I'm following. I'm having a good time within these episodes of the Blacklist sort of being, like, faked out. And I don't feel manipulated. That's what's cool about it. I just feel like I'm like, oh, that's cool. So, goes for the knife. Obviously, it's there. It looks like Vargas sold him out. But, of course, Vargas didn't sell him out. It was part of the plan all along. They escape. They get out. Dembe's like, you know, finds the ad in the classifieds for the tuba
mouthpiece,
and there's
with
that
the phone number.
You know, the phone number is like, this is how we find Red, and good old Pee Wee's like, that's all I needed to know.
Bang.
Shoots him in the side.
In the side.
So did not see that coming. 10 miles away, I was literally I gasped out loud. I'm like, no, Pee Wee. I think so. I wrote down, no, Pee Wee, no.
No, Pee Wee, no. I originally thought that maybe Mr. Vargas was there on behalf of Mr. Solomon because he wasn't really that beat up that bad. We never saw him getting beaten up.
There were some predictions online that was the case.
But then the whole spoon shiv thing, I was like, okay, they concocted this great plan. They're really in this together. This is awesome.
Right.
And then he turns it around again and then shoots him. I was so misdirected. I did not see it coming. I was shocked and appalled and I gasped.
Yeah, I did too. Audible gasp. That happened. But let's talk about him shooting him in the side and not the face. I mean, obviously, we don't want Dembe to die, so I'm glad he didn't do that. But wouldn't he just say, thanks, blam, shoot him in the face as a cold-blooded killer? Is it A, he doesn't like blood? B, he really doesn't want to hurt Dembe. He's just doing this for the money. He doesn't want to incur the wrath of Red. Like, what are we telling ourselves as to why he shot him in the side? Aside from that,
I think all
just
of those
move.
Things. I'm not sure. Right. I mean, the point, number one point I can think of is that they just don't want, the writers are not going to kill Dembe.
Of course.
That's
well,
number
well,
one.
We know that, but what's the character
Vargas's
motivation?
Motivation? I don't know.
maybe we find out that, like, oh, I'm sorry, they had to do it. They had my granny. Like,
well,
I had to, you know,
shoot
whatever.
Him in the leg. I mean, that could do some, that could kill him. It really could.
Yeah, it could.
So I
hope we find out that Mr. Vargas was, you know, under duress because they had his kids or his boyfriend or girlfriend or the granny or something. Like, sorry, Dembe, that's why I didn't kill you. I had to tell him something, like, because they were going to kill my, I don't know. Maybe, I'm hoping it's something like that, or not that just Pee-wee's just an opportunist. We're kind of getting into predictions, but that's my thought. What do you think of that? Do you think Pee-wee's a bad guy for real?
I don't know. Okay. Let me think on that a little bit.
Because the whole notion is, like, I'm going to torture this guy, your good friend, so that you we'll talk, but if he's not, if he's willing to turn on Dembe, then obviously he's not that good of a friend. And how come Dembe didn't know that Mr. Vargas is such an opportunist that he would turn on him?
Do you think he was originally brought in to be tortured, and then they convinced him?
Another good question. Like, we'll ask that for you guys out there.
Yeah.
Did you know?
Did he break under the torture and say, "I'll do this for you"?
Is Mr. Vargas really a bad guy? Was this a plan all along, or did he break under torture as we assume he did with the knife thing? So mm-hmm. with the shiv. So that's all interesting. I was really in that moment when they're in the car, like opening the opening the classified, I'm like, again, my web series. Like, I want to see Dembe and Mr. Vargas, like, out doing their thing. This is so great. We're going to get, oh, he shot him. You know, like that. I was like, oh, my web series gone. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe we'll see that. At least it wasn't Mr. Kaplan, as someone said in the recap. At least it was Mr. Kaplan and that turned bad.
Oh, that turned bad.
Yeah,
okay.
It wasn't Mr. Kaplan. Oh, I thought that was all very cool, very inspired, very also plot twisty turny. Thank you, writers, for that.
But I believe Dembe lives. I do.
Okay.
I mean, he was still breathing.
Oh, he's gotta live.
Passed out. People were running towards the car. Dembe. He's gonna be fine, guys. He's gonna be just fine.
I believe that. So another sort of storyline we have going on cooking here is we have Cooper and Tom sort of doing their thing, mm-hmm. right? And so let's just talk this through. So we first see Cooper and Tom together talking about, like, you know, why they're going to get what they're doing. And Tom and Cooper sort of gets into, like, you know, I don't trust you, but this is what we're going to do. And I love that conversation and, you know, the whole notion of, you know, what do? We're going to throw out the rule book. And he says, no, maybe just bend the bindings a bit.
Yeah,
bend the bindings a bit. My other web series, I love Tom. I love Tom and I love Cooper together. And
I do too.
And again, kudos to the writers because my big complaint is, you know, giving Cooper something to do. I love this is a good thing for Cooper, the character, to do. Good use of Harold here. And I love it's kind of a good use of Tom because Tom is this sort of chameleon super spy who can infiltrate whatever situation he needs to infiltrate and become whoever he needs to become in order to do whatever the shit he needs to do. So I love the idea of that too. Are you on board with the Cooper Tom situation?
I am totally on board.
Okay.
As I've been saying since the introduction of Tom the last two episodes, I was like, oh, God, and I love you, Tom, but what are you doing here?
Yep.
I don't need you. Nobody needs you.
Yep.
Go home. Get back on your boat.
Right.
It's painful for me to say, guys. It's hard for me to say that.
Yeah.
But now there's definite purpose, and mm-hmm. now I really like this teaming up. I love that we have a focus on the Karakut.
Yes.
Storyline. So it's not Red and Lizzie going after them and Ress are going after them. It's very focused. That's what I've been liking so much about this season is just the focus. It's very sharp.
Yeah.
Which
and again,
appreciate.
Credit to Bokenkamp and the guys because we still got these things, these big ideas, right? But if we focus it in on, we got, Tom and Cooper going after, Karakut, mm-hmm. and we have, Red Wrestler and Navabi focusing on
Red and Lizzie.
We got Red and Lizzie focusing on the Cabal. And it's like, okay, that's a show. I got three things. And then we got Dembe and Mr. Vargas on the run, like doing whatever, focusing on Mr. Solomon and that whole side. Like,
it just doesn't feel.
I love it.
Before, I just felt like very flaily.
Yeah.
You know, like I just didn't know where to focus. I didn't know where to land. Whenever I was in a new scene, I was like, what are we going to deal with here?
Yeah.
Now I know.
Yeah, it's great.
And I can keep, maybe like just have a short attention span. I don't know. But like, I now know. I like the sort of linear idea of like, this is their job. Everybody has a job.
They've done a great job.
I can focus that.
They've done a great job of setting us on four good paths here and four good storylines, so we can sort of like let them go, and I'm willing to follow those. And they're all interconnected.
And they're sharply interconnected, though.
Sharply
it's not
connected,
loosely,
not loosely
interconnected.
Like maybe there's a thing in your pocket that's a secret toy box that'll unlock the secrets to the other secret. It's like, but this
absolutely.
And then maybe I'm your dad, but who knows? Because your dad was killed, but he's really not your dad. He's your stepdad. But I'm like the guy in the fire. All right. I don't know. I like where we are now.
Diamonds in your vests.
Okay. The jewels are sewn into the corset. They're sewn into the corset. Like, even we lost it. We were so far in the conspiracy theory that we were going to the Romanov family or whatever it is. The jewels were in Lizzie's corset. Lizzie's Anastasia.
They sewed jewels into their corsets.
I
jumped the shark.
We were jumping sharks, reaching for conspiracy theories last season, but now we're focused. Okay. So I do like that. And so I like the idea too of them concocting this story of what Tom's deep cover thing is. And I do want to mention this episode was directed by, Omar Madea. I think it's Madea. He's a sort of an accomplished TV director. He's directed a bunch of episodes of like sort of the new 24 and some other stuff. And I mentioned him because I really love the pacing of this episode. I love how tight this episode was, but I did love that introduction of that montage intercut between when Tom is sort of getting into character.
Yeah.
That was very well done, right?
Oh, I loved it.
That was fun. That was a really like little nice nugget within this episode, within an episodic TV episode that didn't feel like episodic television, where like he's him and Cooper are coming up with the name, and they cut to him working on it, and they cut to him telling the story, and they cut to him actually fully in character, and we bought it.
I thought it was genius, actually.
Yeah. And so what do you think of, this is the obvious, so clearly, you know, Super Hunk, Ryan Eggle did not test well as a neo-Nazi, so they decided to make him a super international Playboy bachelor con man, if you will. Mm-hmm. But he's literally like the character on The Bachelor. You know, he's literally like super good looking, hot. He's got the suit, he's got the watch, and he's doing his thing. But he's still a bad boy con man.
Loved every second.
Like, it's like, what can we do to make him desirable again? So I think they win there, right?
They win.
This guy's way better than the sweater. I win. You win. So I'm okay with all this. You know, I'm back on Team Tom Keen. There you go. See that five times.
Team Tom Keen. That's hard.
Yeah. Team Tom Keen. However, I must say, goddamn Lizzie Keen. Now this is a Lizzie Keen issue. This isn't a Megan Boone issue. This is a Lizzie Keen. This woman is driving me absolutely nuts. Red said, "Do not call Tom." And she was like, I promise I'm not going to call. But she calls, and then the lovely waitress at the thing, like, oh, you're the girl.
It's you.
Like, oh. And like, which wouldn't ring any alarm bells. Like, oh, you know who I am? I'm a fugitive. Like, whatever. It's you. Yeah, he said, give you this number. The whole thing is like, wait, nice deep cover, Lizzie. You know, and the hoodie is, I don't know. That killed me. I'm screaming yelling at the screen.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Of course she was going to do it.
We knew she was going to do it. I thought she was going to ask the gym.
I couldn't believe Aram gave that up, too. Yeah. And I was like, she doesn't need to know that, Aram. Yeah. Come on.
I love the way he gave it up. He's like, well, Wrestler didn't let Tom Keen came in, and Wrestler didn't even care. He's like, what? He did what? Yeah, Wrestler.
I love the way that exchange went. I did love that moment, though. This was a good Megan Boone moment, actually, when Aram gave up that information and her reaction to that, and Red seeing that reaction and quickly changing the subject.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-oh. I love that. So then this all leads up to that final phone call that they finally do connect while Red is in the theater, you know, just going over old time, pouring vodka with the old failed theater owner, and they're like reminiscing over old times. Lizzie sneaks down into the thing. Wait, but not before. There is one more Lizzie Keen moment, which I have to just call out. That was just driving me nuts.
Okay.
After they get the notebook, and they're going through all this work, and everything seems to be going well, and they're working together as a team. Lizzie's quote is, I should have never agreed to this. You know, risking everything for another list of names? How valuable can they be? I mean, that's a quote.
Oh, God.
I should have never agreed to this. Oh. What was your plan, Lizzie? Do you have a plan? Another list of names, Red? I mean, I know you know everything and you've been right every single time, but Red, I should have never agreed to this. I wrote, STFU, Lizzie, Jesus. God. All right. Anyway, there's that. So after that whole outburst, and Red's like, no, it's fine, Lizzie, I got it. Then she goes and calls Tom in a moment that, I don't know.
Moment of weakness.
In a moment of weakness. But what, so, I, you know, I'm not, I don't know. I don't understand women. I don't understand women. I've been around for a few years. Like, she's like, what is she, like, I just want you to know that I'm bad and I'm just in too much trouble and I know you're after me, but like, I don't want you to get in any more trouble and just forget about me. I've done too many bad things. I just want you to know.
And you're such a good guy.
You're such a good guy. I should have just went into the boat, but it's over now. I just wanted to let you know. Like, is that a thing? Like, what was she? Did she really mean that? Or is she really like, what are you doing, Tom? What was her motivation there? Because Tom, of course, is like, no, I love you. I'm already in. I'm coming in. You're a good person, Lizzie. I'm coming to save you. What'd you make of that whole interaction? I mean, did it push any buttons? For you? Because
it pushed my, like,
I watched it like this.
Good face. Stone face. I watched it more of like a slow shake of my head sort of way. I mean, I'm not surprised that she did it.
Sure.
She obviously can never be left alone because she makes the poorest of poor choices.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it sort of harkens back to what her true fantasy was of walking in a park with her husband,
yep,
holding the hand of her daughter, and she never lets go.
Which my prediction is that's how the series ends.
Yeah.
I predict right now. Thank you. Right now the series ends like that. But go
yes.
ahead.
I could 100% get on board with that.
Yes. Okay.
So I think maybe she has all these stirrings of emotion. She doesn't know who she is right now. She's living this life of crime as a fugitive, but you know, every episode she has this little sentimental moment where she, you know, last episode she goes, what happened? Like, I used to consider myself a lucky person. I had a husband. She's been bringing up the husband a lot lately. And now her deepest, darkest fantasy is to walk in a park with her husband. And
yeah.
I think she misses him and misses having a sense of normalcy, even though there's nothing normal about their relationship now. It was for a while.
Yeah.
And maybe she is reaching out to someone to understand her the way she used to be when things felt normal.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All the same, it was a stupid, idiotic move.
Okay, so we're in agreement as a character move for Lizzie. That was a dumb move for Lizzie. And we also agree that moment when she's like, "I should have never agreed to this," is another like roll your eyes, Lizzie Keen moment. You know, now as and I'm going to ask this as a dramatic device of like, you know, pulling our heartstrings to these two crazy kids, these two crazy lovers, star-crossed lovers, mm-hmm. have been through this like, and Tom's out there. In going deep cover to save her, and Lizzie's out there, you know, are you buying as a dramatic device? Does that like make you swoon? Are you kind of like, all right?
No. Okay. It doesn't make
Is that
me
working
swoon.
For any, I want to know if that's working for any of you guys out there at all. You know, I'm we're all on board. It's not a criticism of the show. I just think that's a little over the top. A little too notebooky.
A little notebooky.
Yeah, but you know.
I'm coming to save you. I love you.
Or
click.
A little, what's the other, Last of the Mohicans E. You know, I will find you. Whatever. That's all. So, all right. Good. It's romantic, but
it's romantic. It adds just another layer, and you know, any excuse to get more Tom Keen going.
Yeah. Great episode. Good show. Good third season.
Good episode.
Good writing the ship, gentlemen and ladies who write The Blacklist. Let's get into some predictions. I will choose Joe Flippo. What are your predictions? No. Julia. What do you got?
I don't really have a prediction much. No, not really. I mean, I predict that Dembe survived, but I don't think I'm the only one who's predicting that out there. That's
well,
kind
where
of a
are we
cop
going?
Out.
So, like, I didn't see any previews for next week. I missed the previews. So I don't know what's
our... I didn't see previews either.
Okay, so that's this is fun that we have a preview-free prediction. So what are we predicting for Thursday's episode?
I think Tom will get buddy-buddy with this Ashton? Asher?
Yeah. Where's that going?
I don't know. He's going to find Karakurt.
Okay, wait. So just so I'm clear, is he like getting buddy buddy? Like, are they like pals? Or are they like pals? Are they like? Is Asher like wanting to do it with Tom, or does he just want to hang out with Tom?
Oh, I think he just wants to hang out with Tom.
All
right. I don't know. Maybe not.
I don't know. I couldn't tell when he's like this. I'm getting close to this guy. He has a penchant for rough guys, good looking rough guys, and I was like, oh, okay.
Well, he has to infiltrate that circle where Karakurt's brother-in-law runs, and he's hiding with extensive facial, whatever.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm interested to see what's on that page that he ripped out.
Yeah,
who's on that? Some Cabalis,
right?
Maybe
Cabalis. I like that.
Some Cabalis.
I need some hot Cabalis.
Yeah, that's so good right now. Actually, yes. I don't know. I'm really failing at this right now. I don't really have a prediction, which I enjoy for once on this show.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. You know. Let's see what you got.
I got nothing. I think I said it before. I think the big board is leading to a bigger picture.
Yes.
We talked about how this Blacklist this season is all about the cabal and getting to the cabal. It's actually Red's Blacklist, and the Blacklist is sort of flipped. You know, I thought that the Notebook would be the new Blacklist, but I think we kind of have, you know, the Blacklist again is more of an idea than it is an actual list. And I think that what that board is going to end up showing us will be the answer that illuminates everything. And I'm really interested to see the pieces to this board.
I do think that we're going to get something from Navabi. You know,
right.
she was very, she was a very interesting character this episode with some of the things that she said in regards to Lizzie and in regards to her own past.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe her actual role will be revealed very soon.
Okay.
Maybe Red will reach out to her.
Okay, I'm with all that.
How's that? There we go. It takes me a while, but I come up with something.
You know what, man? That's good. I'm not mad at you in your predictions. I want to do a couple of things here as I look into the internet to find stuff.
What do you see there?
Well, in the internet, I see. I'm still working on it. Why don't you say Karakut three times till I find what I'm looking for on the internet? thanks, Stephen Lemieux. Because people love the way you say Karakut.
Karakut.
Yes. Say Tom Keen. What was the thing we can't say?
Team Tom Keen.
That wasn't so hard that time.
Okay. Team Tom Keen. Team Tom Keen. Nope.
I better practice.
What are you looking for, Joe?
I'm looking for I want to give our people some shout outs. And I got it. Okay, good. Okay, fine. Sorry. I got to.
Right. Oh my God!
Boom! Hey, I want to give a shout out to some of you guys who love our show. No, I want to talk to you. Thank you very much for listening. I want to mention to all you folks on YouTube, Miss Plumification, VFC Church Musician, of course, Mahogany 1985, Janice Klein, Fernando Guerra Helde, Reich Ech. Sorry, William Francis Collette. The Popolin Paradise. What else we got? Of course, Hestia Prytaneum, who I can never say, but I love you. Alice Kay and Performing Systems. Thank you so much. And of course to, Jasmine and Kelly Plowman Warden and of course my man, Dave, 1955 or 155. I'm screwing this whole thing up. Anyway,
we got some Twitter ones too.
Oh, Dave 1555. Thank you for your spirited back and forth about us and AfterBuzz, and we are doing our best to correct all that. But thank you so much for listening and loving us and continue to watch. And Jules, you have some?
We have Kelly or Kelly at Kelly 3222 on Twitter. Mike Blanchard, TFGI Mike, one Mike, E Hungry 302. Ren Einsburn, Marcy Lima. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. And also, last but not least, I mean, thank you guys for actually getting on iTunes and rating us on iTunes. We appreciate that. Still continue to do that. Got a bunch of new crazy ratings from people. Haley Wan, thank you. Tycoon One. Beat GA, Rosemary 42, WSJ Names. And Core, I'm the worst at reading these. Where's Nando? Destiny Morma, TNT Ritz, and Repa Sasha. I think that's it.
Cool.
Thank you for all your ratings. They're mostly overwhelmingly positive, and we really appreciate that. We're doing our best to make this season's three the best Blacklist podcast we can, and I think that once Joe gets back here on Friday, we can abuse him and blame everything on him, and it'll make the show a lot better. But thank you guys for listening. Thanks for putting up with us, and we will be back next week.
Back on Friday.
Now, wait. There's a rumor. Mm-hmm. Julia's hell-bent on having us dress up on Friday.
I do kind of stall to dress up like Blacklist characters.
Yes. And I don't know what we're all going to be, but I'm not sure if we're going to dress up. I'm not sure it's going to happen, but we need some suggestions.
Yeah.
So, thank you. So
tweet at us.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you all very soon. That's all we
where
got.
Where did everyone find you?
No, where can we find each other?
Come on.
Where can we find you? I'm sorry.
Guys.
I suck.
You don't suck.
Okay.
We love you.
Thanks.
Anyways, you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram with my name, Julia Carely, JuliaCarely. So follow me, please.
Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope at Joe K. Braswell. You can find Flippo on Twitter at Joe Flippo and on his website, josephsanflippo.com. Mm-hmm. We'll all be here together this Friday, and we'll see you then.
Yep. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals. The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily...